and welcome to the Hear It podcast. I'm your host, Rebecca Roberts, and I'll be speaking with guests about the campaigns, insights and ideas to better engage youth audiences. I really hope you like it.
This episode, we are joined by Rodney Hines, sports editor at The Voice Media Group, author, broadcaster and lecturer. Rodney also co-founded the Football Blacklist and among various accolades featured on the Diversity Power List this last year. We'll be talking about a great piece of research called British Black Voices, which I'll link up in the show notes, in particular findings around young adults, as well as sport and why what we see on the pitch and how it's dealt with can play such a significant role in society. Rodney, thanks very much for coming on the podcast today.
No problem. My pleasure.
So for anyone who doesn't know, tell us a little bit about The Voice and its involvement in the British Black Voices project.
The Voice newspaper, we've just entered our 41st year of publishing, set up in 1982 by a visionary called Val McKellar. And essentially, it does what it says on the tin. It provides a voice for the African Caribbean communities in the United Kingdom. The issues at the start of our life, for the want of a better term, were housing, mental health, policing, etc., etc. And I say that because, you know, many, many years later, those are still the issues. And in terms of Black British Voices, it was a piece of work. And I've got to give Paula Dyke, my colleague at The Voice, the biggest props in the world for being the energy and enthusiasm behind Black British Voices. It was a case of, let's have a look at where we are now as the communities I described earlier. And once again, the issues are policing, they are mental health, they are housing. I'm not saying it's all doom and gloom, because clearly it's not. Clearly there have been really positive steps. We have something that we do at The Voice now called, say, for example, the Black British magazine, Black Business magazine. So we now have a lot of entrepreneurs within our community. In the world of sport and entertainment, we're moving forward at a glorious pace. And then in other industries as well, in health and all those sort of great areas, we are making massive strides. But what Black British Voices has done, it's a unique piece of work, because it's given the communities that I've talked about a real opportunity to vent and share where they see themselves as we close out 2023 and look forward to new years and new decades ahead. So that has been the alignment in terms of The Voice and Black British Voices at the moment.
It is such a big study. And what I love about it, it's got a lot of quantitative information in there, but also some qualitative. It doesn't just talk about the problems, it talks about what could be done. And I really want to focus on the findings about young Black Britons, in particular their perspective about the future. So they were around 20 times more negative looking ahead. You know, this spans across education, government, the workplace, and more broadly, what sort of struck me, that sort of feeling that would racism be dealt with in the future and being tackled in all aspects of life, including sport. What findings in particular around young people did you find sort of startling or hopeful? You know, what's your take on that?
What I certainly felt was their disappointment. While obviously I didn't do the survey myself, when you see those findings that you talk about, you can see that there's disappointment, there's some fear maybe as well. And if you think about it, you know, quite obviously the young people are our future. There are future politicians, sports people, nurses, doctors, judges, etc., etc., if they want to go down that route. So I detected a lot of disappointment. And I've got to say that not just with the young people, but the broader piece as well, I wasn't overly surprised by some of these findings, because, listen, I'm out there within the community. I've been at The Voice 23 plus years now. While they can acknowledge that some progress is made in some key areas, it's not enough. And what they're really saying is, what's there going to be for me? Or what's there going to be, maybe even more importantly, for their kids? So, yeah, there was a detection on my part, and the survey sort of underpinned it with its stats and facts, that there was disappointment, not feeling that they belong as well to the country, to the environment. And I found that quite startling, because you're talking about a good percentage of people that were more than likely born in this country, and feeling that sense of not belonging somewhere. I mean, that must be quite disappointing as well. I mean, listen, many, many moons ago, you had Windrush, you had people coming over from the Caribbean and Africa and wanting to set up home. Maybe those plans did or didn't work out as they saw them, but we've got a generation now that are definitely born in the UK, but don't feel it's for them. And I think that's one of the most startling pieces of the findings that I saw in Black British Voices.
And I guess it links to the voice more broadly around giving people this sense of voice. And there'll be lots of people listening who work in kind of local authority councils, sports organisation, higher education, who recognise these findings and wanting to kind of work with young people to make them feel heard. Well, I guess a common issue is, you know, you listen to young people and then you don't do anything about it. So what's your take on that? Because, I mean, obviously you write about sport a lot. We were talking, actually, weren't we, before this call about they're changing football as much as you'd have thought they would have, even like, you know, years, you're like, oh, we're still having the same conversation. Yeah. How do you think we can kind of enable young audiences to feel that they have a voice and are listened to?
It's interesting you talk about football. And football radio is really, and sport generally is a cameo of life, really, whereby you have this talent, you have these young people. Certain things happen, and let's say these things are negatively, and then the fear and disappointment is that nothing's done about it. So how do young people feel? What can they do about it? I think it needs to be more than listened to. I think there then needs to be tangible action. And I think that's where, you know, when the findings have come out, people do get, because we can talk all day long, can't we? What it needs is people in power, on boards, chief executives, et cetera, et cetera, to action some of the points that have been put forward. Now, I'm not saying this is going to be done at the click of a finger or overnight, but tangible action over a period of time. I think one of the things that young people or the Black community certainly want to see is consistency of action. So action is great. You know, we've seen maybe employers or people in power execute something in, say, 2023. What happens in 2024? What happens in 2025? Well, you're talking about a strategy here, really, aren't you? And I think that's what I think young people and the communities that we're talking about in particular just want to see people acting on what they've heard. And I've seen that work in recent times, certainly since the killing of George Floyd, Black Lives Matter, etc. I have seen people make decisions that maybe they wouldn't have made prior to those events, and it's been for the common good. It's a pity that it took a Black man to get killed in the United States and then people to take to the streets around the world. However, I've seen it happen, and I say those in power have the ability to influence. They just need to have the will to influence.
Yeah, definitely. I think also what you said that about it's going beyond that kind of face level, like, okay, we've recruited from a more diverse community. Okay, so what happens when they get in that job?
Absolutely. What's the pathways?
100%. And I think this the tokenistic, you know, Black History Month kind of campaign, or
absolutely right.
I think people are seeing beyond that. And I hope that's the case. I hope that's what young people kind of expect as well. So I think if you're doing these campaigns, like I spoke to quite a few groups that feel very like there is a fatigue with being asked the same issues over and over.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right, Rebecca. You know, it's like Black History Month. We use that as an example. What happens from November the 1st? You know, so we get October out of the way. Certain organizations will cram everything they've got into October the 1st to the 31st. Come November the 1st, they take a different stance. Now, that is as disappointing as anything else, because if we stay with young people, if we stay with the communities that we're talking about generally, that's not consistency of action. Some of the items, and I might be going off on a slight tangent, some of the items that take up people's mindsets in October, do them in December, do them in March, you know, and the word tokenistic that you used, I think there's a cynicism sometimes with certain communities that that's all it is.
Agreed. And I've also seen quite a lot of backlash, for example, in higher education, and they've gone, your website and your brochures make it look like a really diverse community. It's not. Mm. Like, where are these images from? And I think there is a real issue there, is if you're not it, don't try and pretend you are. Like, yeah, absolutely. Do the work to actually go, what's the issue here?
So that actually adds to the problem in terms of perception, you know?
Readers. Yeah. Let's take it to sport then, where we both will enjoy trying a bit more. And it's power to shape things for youth audiences. The men's Euros, that was a difficult reminder of some of the problems that still exist in football, but perhaps a great opportunity with how those players behaved as well, and kind of that pushback around, like, what's not okay. We're still seeing the same issues for a lot of players.
Yeah, I mean, the Euros were interesting to say the very least, because there you had a very diverse England team doing well in a tournament. It's not often we can say that. It was a home tournament. And I'll go back to England manager Gareth Southgate and the players saying in advance of that tournament that killing of George Floyd, Black Lives Matter, we support Black Lives Matter, and we're going to take the knee before each game. And I was fortunate enough to cover that tournament quite comprehensively. And I remember being at the first game, England-Croatia. It was a Sunday in June. The weather was great. Everyone was very happy. And the players took the knee. And I won't say the majority in the stadium, but a large percentage, and most of the fans in the place were English, obviously, they booed their own team for taking the knee. Now that, as a football fan, as a black man, as a journalist, really, really took me by surprise and disappointed me at the same time. And I just thought, where are we? You know, if it, you know, sport is a unifier. When you talk about supporting England, that's the ultimate unifier. You know what I mean? And here were a percentage of England fans booing their own team. Now, obviously, we know the story. England had a really good tournament, got to the final. The likes of Raheem Sterling, Kyle Walker were doing what they're doing. This was a real great advert for diversity, this team. Doing well, high-profile matches. And obviously, we got to the final. And Bukayo Saka, Marcus Rashford, and Jadon Sancho all missed the key penalties. And that was a really interesting time because we are aware of the social media abuse that those three players faced. Clearly not right, quite damaging. Credit to at least two out of three of those guys that have gone on to rebuild themselves and their careers, etc., etc. But I sit down and think about that reaction, and I think about what could it have done for race relations if those guys had been successful taking penalties? England would have been European champions and everything would have been great. And it would have been the biggest thing since 1966 in terms of a World Cup win. But it didn't go that way. So they say often in sport there are fine margins about results. And I think we had fine margins there as well, that those guys suffered abuse. And when the team was doing well during the tournament, everyone was happy. And I think that's where a lot of the black community almost go back into their shells and say, I told you so. We're only there to serve, to entertain, et cetera, et cetera. And when things go wrong, we're in the firing line. So the Euros was interested in the respect that, you know what, it could have gone either way, because if England had won the Euros, possibly the acceptance of black people, even at just on a sporting level, would have been greater, better, more accepted. It shouldn't be that shallow, but sometimes that's the way it goes, you know. So it was disappointing, the outcome, but I think what it did, it underpinned a lot of black people that, you know what, we're never really going to get our dues no matter what. And when things go wrong, we're ultimately going to be in the firing line. And that's disappointing, because during most of that tournament, England were flying with that diverse team. But the booing of the team taking the knee at the start and the conclusion of the tournament with the social media abuse of the players probably tells you somewhere a bit more about the truth about how black people are being accepted or not.
Yeah, I mean, what in your view, you touched there on social media, but I mean, there's so much more needs to be done, I think, to just tackle that. Obviously, there's some people that are just always going to be horrendous people, and like, that's a challenge. But from the social media perspective, the FA perspective, media perspective even, like, what do you think needs, what are some of the steps you think that we should be thinking about in terms of preventing that happening?
Yeah, I think the cynic in me says this. If you start affecting people's businesses financially and commercially, you'd soon see a change. And I remain of that view. I don't know how we go about it, but as they say, they can put man on the moon. So there must be ways that social media companies can do what they need to do to find the perpetrators. There must be something that the government can do to fine or halt social media companies if they don't Because we can do anything we want to do. And as I said earlier, Rebecca, it's all about having the will to do something. If there's a will to do something on a sporting level, we now have fancy watches that referees have that tell them that the ball's crossed the line. We now have VAR. If there's a will to do something, it gets done generally. So in terms of the social media companies, I think as long as we can affect their business financially, they'll get things done. We haven't got there yet, but if that kicks in, you'd soon find out that the social media companies, for the want of a better term, will pull their fingers out.
And the other thing I was going to touch on as well around, you know, diversity of sports media, and obviously thinking of I've spoken to Leon Mann recently, but
yeah,
another step around, well, okay, who is in the editorial team? Like, was how we covered the fallout from the Euros and what happened there. Could more have been done to tackle that? Similarly, I'd say, you know, around how we covered the women's final and what happened with the Spanish team and that discourse there kind of like hit the newsroom as a bit of a shock. And I don't think we had to cover it.
It's interesting that you talk about women's sport and the Women's World Cup and the subsequent fallout with the Spanish team and everything that happened there. I actually think that women's sport could be a game changer for some of the issues that we're talking about. Because I think that the female voice, it's always been powerful, but it's becoming increasingly more powerful. It's getting more involved in top-level sport, like that World Cup that we all enjoyed. We saw the fallout with the Spanish coach. We saw the fallout with the Spanish president. And things got done, and people joined on to that understandable bandwagon. So I think female sport has a role to play in terms of trying to change what I call the same old, same old. Just to stay with men's football for a minute, 43% of the Premier League, the best in the world, the biggest, the brightest, whatever, is made up of diverse players. This issue is not going to go away. It will have to be dealt with ultimately. I believe things will change, but it's painfully slow.
Yeah, it's interesting what you said about the women's game there. I think that the kind of rallying call going like, this isn't okay, and actually male players and different associations kind of getting together to kind of point things out. I think that hasn't really happened in the men's game as much.
No, it hasn't. I think there's a freshness about the women's game of football. I think there's a freshness about women's sport, which could be groundbreaking and example setting. I think some of the ills and issues of the men's game, which has just been allowed to go too far down a negative route, I think women will stand up and be listened to and be counted. So we have a freshness of idea. We have a freshness in terms of we're not going to stand for it. Because I think that the Women's World Cup and everything that happened with the Spanish team and the fallout, it was literally women, whether they were playing the game, watching the World Cup or not, were saying, this is not right. We're not going to stand for it. And I think that is so refreshing, because I think in the men's game, we're just caught in this maelstrom of nonsense, really.
Players themselves and those kind of aspiring to play, are we at risk of losing players, or perhaps, you know, feeling like they can't, you know, we can't inspire the next generation, thinking back to that report?
It is a risk, but I think that with 43% of the Premier League being made up of diverse players, I think, going back to those young people you were talking about in the report, if they can see someone like themselves, it still gives them hope. And that's why I say sport is a unifier. So guess what? The authorities are not doing anything, or they're moving very slowly. But I can see a Mo Salah. I can see a Bukayo Saka. A Russo at Arsenal. I can see an Emma Hayes on the bench for Chelsea. So in a way, it can give you what I call a set of blinkers, because you can see someone that sounds like you from the same area, and that can sometimes push you through. So I think that's why I say I remain hopeful, because you can't quite understandably, based on what the report is saying, rely on those in power to get things right. But there are other avenues that can be taken.
Yeah, definitely. That Marcus Rashford effect, particularly in lockdown, I think was very powerful. I think footballers often seen as sort of role models, but perhaps less so now for their cars and money.
Rebecca, that's a great point, and I've got to interrupt you there. Marcus Rashford was responsible for feeding young people up and down this country. They weren't black kids, they weren't white kids, they were just kids, right? And I remember running some stories online about the horrific abuse that boy had to suffer because he did it. And I, you know, I kid you not, I as I was writing the stories on this very laptop that I'm using now to talk to you, I was just so crushed that he was a guy trying to use his influence. Because you know what it's like. A lot of the time with sports people, we want to kick him in the head, don't we? Because they're not doing this. Here's a guy in his mid-20s making sure kids are fed. And he was still receiving abuse. That, for me, said it all. The guys shouldn't shy away from those social issues. And the interesting thing is, Rebecca, a lot of them are doing that sort of work silently as well. They don't necessarily need the plaudits. So, yeah, it's a great point you make in terms of Marcus.
So are there any books, podcasts or research papers that you'd recommend us reading if we'd like to understand more some of the things we've talked about today?
I read a book during lockdown, which was penned by one of the greatest West Indian cricketers of all time, Michael Holding. Why We Kneel and How We Rise. What Michael did with that book, he put a collection of stories together. In that book are the likes of Hope Powell, in there, Thierry Henry, Usain Bolt. And they all give their account of how they suffered racism. I think, if I've got it right, Usain recalls going into a jeweler's and then being followed around by a security guard. And sadly, it happens to a lot of black people. There's this stereotype that you're going to come in there and nick something. But here was Usain Bolt. I mean, I don't know if you become more famous than him. And what the book does, it just confirms that just because of the color of your skin, you're just always being judged. And it was interesting from my point. It wasn't like it was an inner city guy or girl that was recording these stories. Here were top names, you know. Thierry Henry was another, whereby he was trying to get a cab and none of the cab drivers would stop from him. And he believed it was because of his color, because that was real reality, that here you have some of the biggest names in sport still struggling to get the respect they deserve as a human being, essentially because of the color of their skin.
What one stereotype about young people do you think could get in the bin?
I mean, I was born in Hackney, East London. In East London in 2023 isn't viewed the same way as it used to be when I was much younger. And the view was, and one of the stereotypes was, that young black people had no talent, ambition, and that's so far from the truth. I know that to be true because the stereotype based on where you live, on how you speak, is sometimes more important to some people than it should be. But that is one stereotype I'd like to be put in the bin, simply because there's a key word for me, and it's just the word opportunity. That is what's being denied. That's what's been underpinned in Black British Voices report. It's just that opportunity. If you can do someone a favour that's young and help them on their way, fantastic. But if not, just provide them with the same opportunity that most others seem to get.
Thanks for listening to the Hear It podcast. If you like what you heard, please rate, review and subscribe, as it really helps others find us. You can also follow us on Twitter @HearItPodcast or drop us a message by emailing info@threadandfable.com.